Not much. William's mother and Ethel, his grown-up sister, were cutting sandwiches in the kitchen. "Who are you making sandwiches for?" William demanded. His mother surveyed him tentatively. "Well, dear, would you like to help at a little party this afternoon?"
"People come in to tea?" asked William guardedly.
"Yes, dear, you'd be such a help, and..." William interrupted.
"I'll eat up all they leave afterwards for you," he said obligingly. "But I think I won't come this time."
"Thank heaven," murmured Ethel. William crammed a handful of crust into his mouth and went out into the hall. Here he burst suddenly into a flood of raucous sound.
"Oh, who will o'er the downs with me? Oh, who will with me ride?"
Mr. Brown opened the library door.
"Will you stop that confounded noise?"
"I'm sorry," said William amicably. "I forgot you didn't like music." After lunch, William sallied forth once more into the world. At a bend in the road, he stood suddenly silent. A group of children were walking along in front of him. They had evidently just come out of the station. At their head walked a tall, thin man. The children, boys and girls, were about William's age. They were clean and tidy, but badly dressed and with pale faces. A little girl turned round.
"Hello," she said, with a friendly grin. "Did you nearly get left behind? What's your name?"
William liked the almost incredible frizziness of her hair. He liked the dirty feather in her hat and the violent blue of her dress. He liked the way she talked.
"William," he replied. "What's yours?"
"Hecklentine," she said. "Nice name, innit? Lovely coming on the train, weren't it?"
It was evident that she took him for one of her party. He said non-committally.
"Didn't see you on the train. Such a crowd, weren't there? Some from St. Luke's and some from St. Mary's. I dunno half of them. I was just looking out for someone to pal up with."
William's heart swelled with delight. A boy in front turned round. He was pale and undersized and wore a loud check cap that would have fitted a grown man.
"Hello, Freckles," he said to William.
William glared at him fiercely. Eglantine quickly interposed.
"Now then, Albert," she said sharply, "you mind what you says to me and my friends?"
The boy grinned and dropped behind with them.
"What we gonna do anyways?" he said in a mollifying tone of friendship. "Not much to do in the country, is there? No pictures, no nothing."
"There's, Gimes," said William, deliberately adopting the accent of his new friends. He decided to adopt it permanently. He considered it infinitely more interesting than that used by his own circle.
"Gimes," said the boy in the check cap with infinite scorn. "Gimes, running races and such like, and looking at cows and picking flowers. Thanks, not much."
Not much. William stored up this expression for future use.
"They said as how there'd be a tea, and I'm not one to miss a tea, a proper tea, with cake and all. Not much."
William was watching the large check cap with fascinated eyes.
"Where'd you get that cap?"
he said at last.
"Dunno. Like to swap?"
William nodded. The boy whipped off his cap without a word and handed it to William, taking William's school cap in return. William, with a sigh of bliss, put it on. It enveloped his whole head and forehead, the large peak standing out over his nose. He pulled it firmly down. It was the cap of his dreams, the cap of a brigand chief.
"We are smart, ain't we?" said Eglantine with a high-pitched laugh.
William felt blissfully happy walking along beside her.
"Here, what does your father do?"
demanded Albert of William suddenly.
What does yours?" replied William guardedly.
"He goes round with a barrow, selling things."
"Mine sweeps chimneys," said Eglantine. "He gets that black."
They both turned on William.
"What does yours do?"
William could not bear to confess that his father merely caught a train to London and his office every morning.
"Ain't got no father," he said doggedly.
"You're a horfin, then,"
said Eglantine, with an air of wide knowledge of the world. At this point, the tall, thin man in front stopped and collected his flock around him. He wore a harassed and anxious expression.
"Now," he said, "are we all here?"
"Please, sir, William's a horfin,"
said Eglantine excitedly. Yes, said the tall man. Poor little fellow. Now, come along, come along. We're going to play in the woods first, children, and then go to a kind friend's to tea. The vicar's arranged it all. Very kind. Yes, this way, I think. Again, the little procession moved on its way.
Softy, commented Eglantine scornfully. Why can't they talk like other folks?
William redoubled his efforts to acquire his friend's intonation.
Yes, why I'd like to know, he said, pulling his large and loud tweed cap yet further over his eyes.
The tall, thin man at the head of the procession stopped again.
I'll just go into this house, children, and ask the way to the woods.
He went up the pathway.
Are we going to hang round him all the time? Asked William, discontentedly. Won't be no fun. Not much, he added proudly, after a slight pause.
Well, he knows the way, and we don't, said Albert.
I do, said William. You come with me, quick, afore he comes out.
They followed William silently round the back of the house, across a field, and along another road. At a pair of iron gates leading past a lodge into a winding drive, Eglantine stopped.
Let's go in here.
Even William was aghast.
It's someone's guarding, he explained. They'll turn us out.
Eglantine squared her thin shoulders.
Let 'em just try turning me out, she said.
Not much, murmured William proudly. They went up the drive. Then Eglantine saw a hedge with a gate in it and marshalled her party through that. Within they saw a lawn, some gardens, and a fountain.
Looks all right, commented Eglantine loftily.
A young man rose languidly from a hammock in the trees.
I beg your pardon, he said politely.
Granted,
said Eglantine, not to be outdone in politeness.
Can I do anything for you?
Said the young man.
We're St. Luke's and St. Mary's, explained Eglantine importantly.
I see,
said the young man.
Him, said Eglantine, pointing at William, he's a Hoffin.
The young man adjusted a monocle.
Really? How intensely interesting.
We've come into the country for a holiday, went on Eglantine, and we just came in here to see what it was like in here.
How extremely kind of you, said the young man. I hope you like it.
Eglantine surveyed the scene distantly.
With a band and some swings and a ice cream cart, it'd be all right.
Most of the children were already making the best of their opportunities. Some were chasing butterflies, some picking flowers, some were paddling in the ornamental pond. A butler came down the path with an expression of horror on his face. The young man waved him away.
It's all right, Thompson, he said.
Yes, sir, said the man. But her ladyship has arrived, sir. Her ladyship has had her boxes sent upstairs. I thought I'd better warn you, sir.
The young man groaned.
Is there time for me to be summoned to town? He asked.
I'm afraid not. She's coming to find you now, sir. Here she is, sir.
A large woman bore down upon them. She wore a large cloak and a large hat, and several Pomeranians trotted at her heels. The young man rose to receive her.
"Ah, here you are, Bertram," she said. "You didn't invite me, but I've come."
"How awfully good of you, aunt," said the young man dispiritedly.
The lady put up her lorgnettes and surveyed the children.
"Who are these ragamuffins?" she said slowly and distinctly.
"Just a nice little party of mine," said the young man pleasantly. St. Luke's and St. Mary's. You'll get awfully fond of them. They're very lovable.
The lady's face became stony.
Are you aware that they're trampling on the flowers and splashing in the pond and sitting on the sundial?
Oh, yes, yes. Just jolly childish pranks, you know.
And that one in the awful tweed cap.
Yes, he's an orphan, said the young man. I'm going to give you the room next to his. He's got quite a jolly voice. I heard him humming to himself a moment ago.
One of the girls lifted up her voice in a wail.
I'm tired of the country. I want to go home.
Then Eglantine, who had surveyed the visitor in outraged silence for a few moments, at last burst forth. She set her thin hands on her thin hips and began...
And who are you to talk about ragamuffins? Queen of England, are you? And what about your own hat? Insulting of other people in other people's gardens.
The five Poms, excited by the uproar, burst into simultaneous yapping. The lady turned to her nephew.
I'm going straight home, Bertram. When you have a Christian house to invite me to, perhaps you'll let me know.
Yes, yes, aunt, he screamed back above the noise of the yapping. Shall I see you to your car?
He left them for a few minutes and returned, mopping his brow, in time to rescue three boys from an early death from drowning in the pond. The butler appeared once more.
There's a gentleman at the front door, sir, who seems in a great state, sir. He says that he's lost some slum children.
The young man's face brightened.
Ah, he said. Tell him I've found some. They've done me a very good turn, but I shouldn't mind being relieved of them now.
William was looking anxiously down the road where the tall man was taking them. Eglantine began to expatiate again.
Look at them houses, she said,
with a contemptuous glance at the houses between which they were passing.
Swank! That's all it is, swank. Living in big houses and talking so soft. I've no patience with them. I wouldn't be one of them. No, not for nothing.
William was growing more and more uneasy. The tall man turned in at a gate. William moistened his lips.
He's making a mistake, he murmured, pulling his check cap still further over his eyes.
At the door stood Mrs. Brown and Ethel. Their glance fell first on Eglantine.
What a dreadful child, whispered Mrs. Brown.
Next, it fell on all that could be seen of Eglantine's companion.
What an appalling cap, whispered Ethel.
Here we are, said the young man, with a note of relief in his voice. It's too kind of you, too kind. This is, Eglantine, and, this little boy is an orphan. Yes, poor little chap.
Mrs. Brown laid her hand tenderly on the tweed cap.
Poor little boy, she began. Poor little...
Then she met the eyes beneath the tweed cap. William sat and glared across the table at his late friends. He felt himself disgraced forever. He was a pariah, outside the pale, one of the swanks who lived in big houses and talked soft. His mother's and Ethel's intonation and accent seemed at that moment a public humiliation to him. He didn't dare to meet Eglantine's eyes. Fiercely he munched a currant bun. Into his unoccupied hand stole a small, grimy one.
Never mind, whispered Eglantine. You can't help it.
And William whispered gratefully,
Not much.